White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 324.
I'm Brennan Marcello, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
This is the AU Wishbone, continued off-season coverage.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we are back. We are back from a nice little break. We had a Christmas break, a New Year's break, and my birthday break. And now it is January 15th at night, and we are back on the air at our usual time on a Monday night at 8:30 Central. And like some 80s sitcom, people want to tune in and watch it on Monday night at 8:30. And here we are. So happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, man.
Yeah, I'm going to crack open my... Over the break, I discovered a new taste sensation. I've been drinking nothing but water and Mio's tea for the last year, but Dasani now has little... I don't get money for this. Dasani now has little silver, looking like... They look like little Red Bull cans, but they are carbonated water with natural fruit flavor and zero calories, and they are awesome. And by awesome, I mean they're okay, but they have zero calories, and they're not like full of caffeine and, you know, corn syrup, so they're therefore awesome. So I have a new thing. I got the pineapple here. There's the strawberry. There's the lime. They're really, really good. So, it's nice to have a carbonated beverage again for the first time in about a year. That's good. All right. So, John, over the last couple of weeks, about 2 weeks ago, roughly, give or take a day, Auburn played in our bowl game, the Peach Bowl, as it is now called, and things...
It's the Chick-fil-A Bowl now, but it's the Peach Bowl.
No, it went from the Peach Bowl to the Chick-fil-A Bowl, but now because it's big time again, they've put the peach back in again.
That's right.
Yeah. But things did not go the way we would have liked. I guess, was it a combination of we'll go into it in depth in a minute, but just our immediate reaction, I'm wondering, did we underestimate Central Florida? Did they just play over their heads? Were they a better team than we expected? Did we play like crap, or was it a little bit of everything, or just turnovers? I mean, what's your immediate reaction to that game from 15 days ago?
Two things. One is, I think Auburn played one of its worst games of the year, maybe its worst game of the year in that game. And Central Florida is really good. Central Florida is on a level with Auburn and Georgia and Alabama and Ohio State and those kind of... I think if they played one of those teams on a neutral field tomorrow, they would give them a good game. But I think also Auburn contributed to it, but with poor play. But Central Florida is a legitimately good team, and it would have taken Auburn playing well to do that. And I think the other thing is that we'll get into the details of it, but I really think... We talked about Auburn's motivation in the pre-game analysis, and I think the SEC championship game beat Auburn twice in the way that you were kind of referencing that, you know, that we beat Georgia and Alabama, but look, they're on TV in the playoff. We're playing in this game, and I think that hurt Auburn. So yeah. That was my quick thought. But the bottom line was, you know, we played poorly, and we still had a chance to win the game at the end, and didn't, so...
Yeah, I mean, we were down a little bit, but didn't we come out and take a good solid... It's been a while now. Didn't we take a good solid lead in the second half, and then suddenly defense couldn't stop them?
Well, and then we stood them through a pick six, and, you know, it was a bunch of stuff that happened. So, Yeah.
Which is completely unpredictable and yet somehow very strangely predictable.
He did. Stidham had a great year. I mean, especially compared to how the quarterback play had been the last couple of years.
No kidding.
He had an amazing year. But in the last couple of games, the turnovers really became a problem, the fumbles and the interceptions. So that's something he's got to work on the offseason.
Absolutely. Yeah, the fumbles, the red zone fumbles, it's like it became his specialty. The other thing, though, like I say, we'll do a little review on this, but the other thing that struck me from that game is that it's like against Georgia and Alabama when we won, it was in part because we really got the passing game going. And it felt like against Georgia the second time and against Central Florida, we never really could get the passing game going. It's like we regressed back to the early season struggles that we had against Clemson and all, in a way. And I don't quite know why that was. A little bit offensive line, a little bit Stidham, a little bit receivers, a little bit play calling. I mean, do you know what I mean?
I think the offensive line had a terrible game. I mean, and I think that was their worst game of the year, more than the Clemson game.
Wow.
And I think Stidham was uncomfortable a lot. He was, you know, they took all the little screen pass things away that Auburn had gotten very comfortable doing. They were completely shut those down 100%. And, you know, in addition, I think a lot of the things that Stidham was comfortable doing, they were very ready for. But also, they made him uncomfortable in that game. And the offensive line really, really did a poor job handling their defense. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll go into some in-depth, more analysis, sort of sector by sector on that game in just a couple of minutes. But there is other news to talk about before we go too far down the 15 days ago rabbit hole. First and foremost, we got to say something about the hoops team. The basketball team is on they're in the top 20. They haven't lost a game in a long time. I forget how many they've won now. It was up around 12, 13, 14.
I think it's 14 in a row, I believe.
They beat Tennessee, Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State so far in the conference. And now they're going to go play Alabama on Wednesday, so that's cool. They're doing this without their two, on paper at least, best players, one of whom for sure we know will not be back this year and probably not ever. He's probably going to go pro. Why would he come back?
He might come back.
That would be Wiley. And then there's
Purifoy,
who we just have no clue about whatsoever as of our airtime right now. And so you got to think if Wiley's done for the year, you got to think Purifoy is done as well.
Yes.
For this year at least. And so we have what we have. We are what we are. We're a team that is just with shorter, relatively speaking, players rebounding and playing defense. And they're scoring. They're leading the SEC in scoring right now. They're also leading the SEC, period. When was the last time we said that? 99?
Yes. And the biggest thing is, like you mentioned at the top, like they mentioned this, they're missing those two guys, but they're playing, there's no stars in a way. Like they're playing very unselfish basketball. They're spreading it around evenly. Players are, you know, sharing the ball and doing the extra pass. And there's a lot of guys they have that are kind of doing the dirty work. I mean, players know their role. They're coming out and playing defense, rebounding, passing the ball. So, I really like some of the new guys on the team. And what they're bringing. And the biggest thing is, I mean, this is amazing. Do you know what Auburn's RPI is right now?
No.
Like their computer ring? 6 in the country. 6. The projection that came out today, I think Auburn as a 4 seed in the tournament.
In the tournament. We couldn't get in the NIT the last few years. Man, that's...
No, but prepare yourself now, okay? Mm. This team is going to make the NCAA tournament.
That's amazing.
It's a great team. It's exciting. It's playing at a high level. And, there's a long way to go in the SEC schedule, but they're playing at a very high level. And, you know, there are times when they look bad for a half, and then they come out in the other half and play great and really leave the other team in the dust. So,
yeah, that's been the interesting thing in the conference play so far is that they've done one of two things. They either come out on fire and taken a big lead early, or in at least two of the games, they've gotten way behind, double digits behind, and then ended up winning by double digits.
Mm-hmm.
They come roaring back.
They blew Ole Miss out in the second half. That was...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they went from like 12 down to winning by 13. It was like a 25-point mm-hmm. swing.
Yep.
And similar against Mississippi State. The thing is, and you know, I've talked about this, I said this on Twitter the other day, and we talked about this before, that their deal is they're a streaky offensive team. You know, if they're hitting threes, and I'm trying to think which game it was, either Arkansas or later against Ole Miss or whatever, but a game a couple of weeks ago, they came out and just were not missing three-pointers. They were just lighting up three-pointers. And, you know, and I watched them and I said, you know what, if they're going to win by doing that, that's good, but it's not good. Because it's good because they can do it, but it's not good because that's one of those things that one player or everybody can all go suddenly ice cold doing that. You know, it's almost like if one person catches cold, they all get it when he's talking about missing long shots, you know. And in fact, what I felt like they did on offense against Ole Miss was after they just went ice cold shooting three-pointers, and I was watching that game going, great, we're going to lose this game because I was like, we're going to lose this game because they've gotten ice cold on three-pointers and they're too stubborn to quit trying it. And I honestly think if Purifoy had been in there, they would have kept doing that. But this team didn't do it. They came out in the second half. They started going inside more, and they used their defense. And that, to me, is what's different as well from last year. Last year's team was a really good offensive team in a lot of ways. But this year's team – but last year's team would blow leads. They wouldn't come back. You know,
Year's team was terrible on defense at times.
Oh, they'd be –
they would score 100 points a game, give up 120. So
Right. So this year's team is both – streaky good on offense, but also playing really good defense, and they're rebounding. They went through a streak in the first half against Mississippi State. I'm thinking of that game just because it was the most recent, and several things jumped out at me. They went through a streak against Mississippi State where they weren't rebounding anything, and they were missing everything. And what was amazing was they were only down like 8 for most of the first half when they couldn't make a shot and they couldn't get a rebound. So that shows you how good a defense they're playing, that despite not being able to rebound and not being able to hit an outside shot, they were still within, like, they were inside of double digits for most of the, you know, they didn't have that, they weren't in such a deep hole they couldn't come back.
Yep.
When they got, basically Bryce Brown was who got it going, but once they got it going, so. Yeah, so this is a very fun team, and it's always so amazing to watch Auburn have a good basketball team, because we go so long in between those periods, you know.
It's true. It's been a while.
It's like a really good meal, and then like a month, and you're like on death's door of starvation, fasting, and then you get another really good meal. So if we're really good this year, I guess 2038 will be the next time we have a tournament team if we make it this year. I hate to think that. Hopefully that won't be the case.
It won't be the case. This team's going to be as good or better next year. But I would tell Auburn people now, like, if look at your work calendar and look at the schedule, when the SEC tournament is, when the NCAA tournament is, and you block out some days. I'm just telling you.
It's Auburn in the NCAA tournament is like being a Scotland fan in the World Cup. It's just you watch the NCAA tournament and you're kind of like, yeah, okay. Oh, look, you know, Syracuse won. Okay. Oh, look, UCLA won. Okay. Oh, there was an upset. St. Bonaventure won. Okay. And then it's over. You know, it's kind of like, that's interesting. But if Auburn's actually in the NCAA tournament, it's kind of like the U.S. going to the semifinals of the World Cup. Suddenly you're like, whoa. Basically, this year, the NCAA tournament is going to be the exact opposite of the World Cup.
It's true.
Because we're not going to be in it. But yeah, so that's really interesting. It's exciting to even be thinking right now that we might be in the NCAA tournament, barring, you know, knock on wood here, back on my bookshelf behind me, barring any kind of unexpected collapse. Well, In football-related news, we had several good players go pro, and it was pretty much almost a worst-case scenario. I mean, did anybody ever really think that Stidham was going to go pro. I just never thought that.
I think some people thought it. I think he thought about it.
Okay, I just can't imagine, but okay. But yeah, Kerryon and Petway, it's just disappointing that we never really got to see them at 100% on the field. It's kind of like if we'd gone all those years and Cadillac and Ronnie Brown had never really gotten to play on the same team. You know, it's just,
yep.
Oh, well. And Carlton Davis and Holland, so we figured they were going, and that's disappointing,
well,
too.
Carlton Davis, I knew he was going to go. He was the most obvious one to me. But Holland, I thought there was a chance he might stick around, but he was so hot this year. He was so good that he has the kind of like quick twitch athleticism and speed that I think like when he tests at the combine and stuff, it's going to be off the charts and the NFL's going to love, you know, he's going to shoot up the draft board. So
that's cool. So this brings a question that I was going to ask you. You may have seen, I did a Twitter poll on this earlier today. Who will be our leading rusher next year? Cause the running backfield is getting really scrambled up. You know, we'll have our little small speed guy in some ways inheriting the throne, but I don't know that he's an every down starting tailback in the SEC in Cam Martin. And then you've got basically the redshirt freshman going to be a sophomore in Malik Miller, and you've got the second year true sophomore coming in, Devin Barrett, and then you've got pretty much I don't know much about Whitlow. But then you've got these guys we've just either signed or committed. We've got a heck of a class coming in. I mean, I guess they saw these two guys going off the NFL, hopefully, and they said, this looks like a good place for me to get some playing time, huh?
Well, and this looks like a team that, you know, churns out 1,000-yard rushers and, you know, has a fun offense, you know, it uses players that gets the ball in their hands and stuff, so.
Yeah. Yeah, the last year we didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher was 2008.
Mm-hmm. So we got Asa Martin and Sean Shivers, and then Harold Joyner committed this weekend.
Yeah, that's the pretty much the trifecta we were even hoping for, right? I mean, that's it.
Yeah, that's an amazing haul at running back. I mean, Shivers is really a speed guy. I think he's more of like a Corey Grant kind of role, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, Martin and Joyner, they're talking about using him kind of as a slot receiver, swing guy, I think, more. Mm-hmm. But I think Asa Martin could be the guy. Like, he could. There's a chance he could come in and be the main guy. It could be Whitlow, who redshirted this year, and they said some nice things about during bowl practice when he got a chance to go against a lot of players. So,
but depth, John. We have actual depth at running back. It's amazing. Depth at quarterback and depth at running back. I can't conceive of such a thing.
It's a strange new world.
It is. That's been our absolute Achilles heel the last 3 years or so. Has been, you know, in 14, the Achilles heel was the defense. We shored that up. But 15, 16, and parts of 17 due to injury, our Achilles heel has been depth either at quarterback or running back or both. So this is really luxury, as they say on Monty Python, you know.
And on the quarterback side, I mean, we signed Gatewood, and now Bo Nix is committed. So,
luxury! I can't even imagine. I mean, think of, we got Jarrett Stidham coming back experienced now for a year with his understudy in young Nick Marshall. And in honor of Malik Willis, I will hit this button here while I continue talking. But we've also got, Gatewood, who is little Cam Newton, and give him a little chance to give him a chance to maybe redshirt and be an understudy. And then Bo Nix.
And the other thing I like about this is, you know, in 2018, we had to play Stidham a lot in the early games just to get him some game experience, to get him more reps. And in 2017, we don't have to do that.
Right.
So if there's an early season game you know, we're winning big or whatever, we can get Stidham out of the game and play Malik Willis and get him more real game experience. And also we can more see what he can do.
It's amazing. So Joyner at running back, Bo Nix, who's for next year, right? He's a 2019 commitment.
He's going to sign a year from now, basically.
Or a year from before Christmas, if everything goes well.
Yes.
And then, so that's cool. And I like that he went ahead and did it. I mean, he was, you know, he never really was like, oh, I'm Auburn all the way. He was always kind of like, I'm looking around, you know, he could have been a Peyton Manning instead of an Eli Manning in terms of legacy, you know, if he'd wanted to be. He had every right. But I'm awfully happy to get him. And he seems like he's a really good quarterback, good young guy. And I just like everything about all of our quarter. It doesn't feel like we're taking reclamation projects and rejects. It seems like we're bringing in really good 4- and 5-star high school athletes that can come in and be quarterbacks for Chip Lindsey and for Gus. And I'm excited about that. That's a nice change. What other commitments did we get? Did we get a receiver or something? I'm trying to think.
I mean, since the signing period?
Yeah, since our last show, recently.
Schwartz, did we talk about him?
Yeah, the receiver. That's cool.
I mean, not just the receiver, like one of the fastest guys in the whole country, or legitimate track star speed. So, and that's the other thing with this class is we got some guys with like serious, serious fastest guy in the SEC kind of speed.
We've got
between Schwartz and Shivers.
Yeah, we've got an awesome running back class and awesome receiver class coming in, and that's pretty awesome. We got a new coach, Marcus Woodson.
You know, in January, the NCAA allowed schools to hire a 10th football coach. I mean, Auburn hasn't had any departures or changes at assistant coach yet and none that were planned that we're aware of. So Woodson was at Memphis. He was the secondary coach there, and he's going to be at Auburn. They're going to divide up the secondary, and one of them will coach safeties, one of them will coach cornerbacks, and they'll divide up the nickel guys too. But Woodson was at Memphis. He'd been there a couple of years. He's a younger guy. He's supposed to be a really their best recruiter, a really good recruiter. He was he played at Ole Miss not that long ago. So he's kind of a young, up-and-coming guy. Kind of viewed as like a Travis Williams in the secondary a little bit in terms of like a young guy, very charismatic, a good recruiter, but also a guy that can, coach and inspire the players. And so there was a lot of discussion about, who Auburn might hire. The feeling was they were going to hire a defensive guy. I wouldn't have complained if they hired a special teams coordinator after last year, but they didn't, so... We'll see. Yeah. But no, I mean, again, another really good recruiter and a guy to help on defense. You can't complain about that. So
that's good. That's good. You had a note here that maybe we had gone through the worst 36 hours in Auburn history. I don't know if I'd go that far, but we did.
In terms of college football, not.
I guess when you throw in the fact that Alabama won the national championship on top of everything else, it does start seeming kind of blah. That's the other. You also made a note here, and I'll throw this in too. What did we do on Monday night of that game? I ended up watching it out of morbid interest. Like if a car had crashed into a telephone pole outside my house, I'd have sat there watching if nobody needed my help rescuing them or anything. And so what did you think about that? Just real quick, what was your reaction to Alabama coming back and winning that game and Georgia losing?
I mean,
I feel like you need to bring a Greek philosopher in to kind of really get into this or something. I don't know if I'm capable of doing it.
I mean, I didn't want either one of them to win. Again, I wanted the meteor to hit the stadium or whatever.
Absolutely.
But It was interesting because Georgia really kind of dominated the first half. I mean, they really did. Mm-hmm. But
didn't score enough points.
No, they didn't. But you could – they're right. They should have been ahead further. But you could see that Alabama was not going to win the game if they kept Hurts in at quarterback.
Nope.
And they'd been calling for Tua all year, and they put him in the game, and he really was the spark. And it wasn't just the passing. Like, there was a play in the very first drive – where he ran for a third down and, you know, like a third and 10, and he ran for it and like dove and made it. And I think that, you know, it took a hit when he did it. Mm-hmm. And I think that as much as anything kind of got the team fired up and, you know, and but also like he could throw the ball and he was, you know, that was really the difference in the game. It was the difference at the end of the game. And he really ripped Georgia's heart out, and, you know, I'm not going to complain about that, but, you know, I never want Alabama to win again, so that was kind of frustrating. But, you know, it's fine. You know, the whole, like, Alabama was an underdog and then overcome adversity and all that kind of crap, I don't have anything for that. Like, they got more talent and more coaches and analysts than anybody and more money than anybody in America on this stuff. So yeah. I don't buy any of that kind of stuff. But the reality is this, like, they lost one game this year and it was to Auburn.
And this the thing that keeps coming back to me about it is that the team we saw lose the Iron Bowl, that was not a team that was going to win the national championship.
Nope.
That was a team that was getting shut out at halftime by Georgia. So, I mean, you really do have to credit that to a guy. Right?
I mean, but it wasn't just that. I mean, I think you said it. Like, they got lucky because they didn't have to play Georgia the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, because that, well, not just the bye in terms of the – but Georgia hadn't seen them, yeah, you know, on the field. And Auburn had to play Georgia, Alabama, Georgia back-to-back-to-back. And their defensive staff shared information and learned what Auburn's offense was doing and adapted to it. And Georgia, you know, they had a lot of familiarity with Alabama, but they didn't have the same kind of on-the-field familiarity as they had from those two games against Auburn. So, and I think Alabama just got better with the bye week and the off time. So,
yeah, that's true. I don't know what it is. I didn't think that this year's Alabama team was national championship caliber. I thought last year's team was better than this year's team, and they lost.
I mean, this year's Alabama team would have been fifth or sixth last year. I mean, all of the teams this year were lesser quality. So
I thought so. Yeah, I think that's fair. Let's see. Well, let's talk about our game just a little bit here. We've talked a little bit about it already, but what was our offensive line doing? I mean, let's cut right to it. What was our offensive line doing or not doing that made that such a bad game and such a bad outcome?
Well, I mean, one thing is we, you know, in the earlier games in the season, in the second half of the season especially, when the offensive line was struggling, we would, you know, stop the game or during and change it. We would shake it up. We would take guys in and out. And we didn't do that this time because we were playing all the seniors and it was the last game. So we played a lot of Darius James and he had a terrible game, I thought. And, you know,
with the Capital One Venture,
I think.
Sorry. Web page starts going crazy. My bad. Go ahead.
I mean, I just think. In different games, we would have benched some of those guys and played some younger guys like we did. We did it at A&M. We did it, you know, in the Georgia game. Guys weren't playing well, and we took them out. And this game, because they were seniors, was the last game, we didn't do that. We kind of let it ride. And I think it bit Auburn. Hmm. And I think that's kind of what it is. But I think they did some – nothing was crazy. They did some delayed blitz stuff a lot where a linebacker would hang back and then come. But a lot of it was just, you know, how can we make Stidham uncomfortable? And I don't think, like, Kerryon was okay, but I don't think the run blocking was great either. Mm-hmm. I mean, their run defense was not great. And we did not have good holes. I don't think they held their blocks very well. I don't think we had a lot of power at the point of attack. And I don't think, you know, Central Florida was doing anything super tricky. I just think their guys were being very aggressive and they were coming over, they were tacking up the field and Auburn didn't handle it very well. I thought we played some of the other running backs sparingly, Cam Martin a little bit. but I think, again, it goes back to what we said all year. Like you said a minute ago, like, we didn't have Petway, so it was carry on or nothing. And there were times in that game where I thought you were saying we weren't effective throwing the ball. There were times in that game I thought we threw the ball too much. Mm-hmm. Like, we weren't down 20 points or whatever. We needed to run the ball a little bit more, I thought, and establish it. But, I mean, Stidham was okay. Other than the turnovers, Stidham was okay. Hastings had a great game. Mm-hmm. He stood up and made a bunch of plays. Myers had a couple of catches early, Craig Myers. But I was really disappointed in the defense. Like, I knew their offense was really good, and I knew they were going to score points and move the ball. But, like, their quarterback was really good in that game.
Yeah.
He made a bunch of plays.
He was their leading rusher.
He was, and he was great at just doing that kind of Johnny Manziel move around in the pocket thing to buy time and then just zip the ball into where he needed it to be. He did that about 10 times in that game. It just killed us because he could move just enough, and you could tell that Holland and the other guys, were trying to stay under control and not rush like crazy, so they opened up a lane for him to run through, and that allowed him time to kind of move around and do his thing. So,
well, let's look at his numbers real quick. He was 16 for 35, which is not great, but that's 242 yards. Okay, so he threw for 242, and then he ran on 13 carries, more carries than any of their running backs, for 116 yards with an average of 8.9. Now, you say when somebody runs for an average of 8.9 yards, they probably had like an 80-yard run in there to skew that way up. No, his longest was 23. So he ran for 116 yards and almost 9 yard per carry average, almost a first down every time he ran the ball with a long of only 23. Mm-hmm. I mean, after that, their running backs only had a total of 23 carries for less than 70 yards total. So if we had stopped him, they wouldn't have had a chance.
Well, but again, he's you put those stats up, that's his worst passing day of the season by far. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had the second highest pass efficiency in the country behind the Oklahoma quarterback. Coming into this game. So, to hold him to that was pretty good, but he did not have his best day, but he still really, really gave us problems. So, and without Carlton Davis, and then at one point, we lost somebody else in the secondary, and I think that created some problems for us. I think they were kind of taking advantage of that. So.
Well, it was quite a game.
Two other things. One, we had the big kickoff return to start the second half that kind of gave us a real spark, like an 80-yard kickoff return. And then at the end of the game, I mean, we've said all year we don't know what Stidham could do with a 2-minute drill. And he had it here, and he took the team right down the field at the end of the game. They missed Central Florida missed a field goal. Auburn got the ball with like 2:10 left mm-hmm. on the 20-yard line, drove all the way down the field. Got to about their 20-yard line with, 30 or 40 seconds left, 25 seconds left, something like that. And then Stidham was falling backwards and just threw a terrible pass. He was trying to throw it out of the back of the end zone.
Right.
But because he was falling down and backwards, he couldn't get the arm on. It was interceptions. It was really a terrible pass to even try at that point in the game.
Yeah.
But
so three turnovers for Stidham, and that really was a difference because in the second half – and this is interesting, too, to me. In the second half, the score was 21-21. If you just look at the mm-hmm. second half, they scored 7-14. We scored 14-7. But considering that we only scored 2 field goals in the entire first half, 21 is not too bad. If we could have shut them down in the fourth quarter on defense, or at least gotten down and kicked a field goal, kept the ball out of their hands a little bit, it just seemed like we couldn't hold them back.
One of their scores the second half was the pick six.
Right.
So, that's the thing. Like, the offense, the defense played better in the second half, but, you give them that and, adds to the hole. So,
yeah, it really did. Well, all right. Well, anything else about that game before we get into our last few items and look around the SEC and so forth?
No, only that I was wrong. And we'll get more to that in a bit. But
well, let me thank our patrons. We're on the air largely because not only because so many people enjoy listening to the show, which we're happy about, and we are happy to bring it to you, but also because we are supported financially in our endeavors here through Patreon.com and through you folks out there listening. And for as little as a dollar a month on Patreon.com, you can be part of the family, and I'll mention your name on the air every episode. And you're helping John and me get to go and do right now one live show sometime this fall. We haven't figured out exactly where or when yet, but we're going to do one get-together live show. And, man, we've seen some pretty amazing proposals and plans laid out by some of our listeners to help make that happen. And it's a pretty amazing thing. It's a pretty daunting thing, too. But I'm excited about that. What do you think, John? Are you horrified, excited?
Very excited.
Very excited. So we're going to get you to do it then.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure you're not going, oh, I have to water the grass that day. Sorry. Okay. Well, let me thank our patrons who actually have put us to this point, because I think we're still a little ways away from having two. We need to get up to 300 to have two games to be able to financially do that. But we're at one right now. So there's plenty of room to join in. Oh, we got to talk about the how the pick'em came out.
Oh, yes.
Put a pin in that. Okay. Let me do the list, and then we'll talk about the pick'em. Because okay. I know that a certain yard sale artist wants to hear us talk about that. All right. Well, here's the folks we got to thank right now, and you could join this list for as little as a dollar a month. Our top patrons, of course, always Nicholas Cottrell, Josephine, Christopher Burleson, and Samuel Salvatore. We appreciate you four guys immensely. Y'all go way beyond the call, and we really appreciate it. And then, of course, barely behind them are Neil Dyer, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com. You hear him his stuff talked about on Brandon's show, but he helps us too. Steve Trewick, Richard Stevens, and Justin Bean. And then we have David Evers, Tom Anderson, Timothy, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Richard Stevens, Andrew Barber, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Bill Matthews, Chris Usher, Will Summerford, John McCune, Catherine England, David Simpson, Josh Teal, Mike Finley, Randall Walker, C.T. Wayne, Earl Ricks, Dave Powell, Michael Kirshner, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, George Gaston, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Clay Henson, J.W. Rice, Ward Amway, Dave Medinas, Mark Squire, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Brant Rumble, and Nicholas Craig, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. We've added a few over the break, which is really cool. So thanks to all you guys. I try to zip through that with a speed that will make the donors happy, but will not be so slow as to make everybody else bored. So hopefully everybody enjoyed my little quick reading of that list. How did the bowl pick'em come out, John? I know I did terrible, but other than that, I'm not really sure.
We both did terrible.
Everybody I thought was going to win lost. Everybody I thought was going to lose won. I should have just done my opposite one.
No, I was tied for last. How about that?
We should have done our opposite. If we'd done opposite, we would have both won, or one of us would. You would have won.
Yeah, there we go. But it was a three-way tie. I mean, the person that won the tiebreakers that came in first was J.B. Rice, whose Twitter name is AU Tweep.
Oh, okay.
Albert Tweep.
Absolutely. Well, all of these are our patrons, and we're proud of all of them. Yes.
So, but he, there was a three-way tie between he, Jared, and Whiskey Jones, mm-hmm. and they had a three-way tie at the top, and Auburn Tweep won the tiebreaker, so he was the overall pool winner.
All right. Well, congratulations to him. I mean, I always enjoy his tweets, and always enjoy conversation with him on the Twitter, and so glad to see him pull in the big win, and we got to do something for him. I don't know what yet, but
we gotta figure it out.
We'll have to figure something out. Yeah. And congrats to Jared, our one of our co-hosts on various shows. He's been on this show before for having a tie going into the tiebreaker. That was good job for Jared and everybody else. So we'll do more fun stuff like that. I'm sure we'll do some kind of an NCAA tournament thing, and when that comes around, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So see, if you are one of our patrons, you get to participate in hijinks like this, and it's lots of fun. One other thing I want to remind everybody of is we have a James Bond podcast full time now called On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. Jared, John, and I do some of the shows, and Alan Porter and I do some of the shows. And Jared has a new show that's going to be debuting on that same channel, where he and a couple of his cohorts are gonna do like a rookie agent, people that haven't ever watched these movies before kind of a thing. So we'll have like three different threads running through there. Lots of diverse entertainment on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast from White Rocket Entertainment. And one other thing. I interviewed over the break, if you haven't caught it yet, I interviewed Levi Stahl of the University of Chicago Press talking about the Parker novels of Richard Stark, Donald Westlake. And we had a great conversation, about an hour and 15 minutes. So go over to the White Rocket Podcast, and you can hear Levi and me talking about hardcore crime fiction. It was a lot of fun. All right, so what we got here in our last segment?
I got a couple of quick Wester questions and then a couple of around the SEC things.
Okay. Let's see. Where's Mira? I can't find it. What did I do with it? Oh, it's blue. I thought it was orange.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
What we got?
All right. First question from Clinton Stewart, who says, I just went back and listened to the most recent AU Wishbone podcast, and I don't think I've ever heard John make more wrong predictions about an Auburn game. Was depressing.
Well, to be fair, John's method of preparing for that podcast was to
smoke weed every day.
Oh, ow. No, too, I, that's it's very fair. I was wrong about the Central Florida game, and I did not have a good feeling about it, but I thought it would not turn out like that. So no. It's a good – and it made me think, you know, Barrett Salee does this accountability thing every year. Mm-hmm. And I thought that maybe I'll go back and listen to the preseason podcast and we could talk about what we got right.
We definitely need to do that. On an upcoming show in the dregs of January and February, we need to go back and – look at what we said back in, you know, July and August. Yeah, and bring it around. That's cool.
All right, I'll do that. Brendan O'Dwyer says, is this the most disappointing senior O-line in Auburn history? And is it now common knowledge that to stop the Lindsay offense, you just need to be very aggressive to stop the runs and the screens? I mean, it was just right after the game. I think it was – there were times this year when the offensive line was really good.
Mm-hmm.
When we ran the ball – pretty well on Georgia and Alabama and dominated a lot of other SEC teams running the ball.
Yeah.
But there were times also, I mean, this game, the bowl game, the Clemson game, the Georgia game and the championship game, when the offensive line did not play well and got pushed around, they got a lot of pressure on the quarterback. So, and I think that's just something, you know, some of it was talent and some of it was, you know, Stidham, especially the Clemson game, getting comfortable and us figuring out what he could do and what the offense should be. So I feel like with a whole other year going through the offseason, going through spring practice with the receivers and stuff, that he's going to be much better and he will make the offense look better. I think the offensive line is a concern. We got to worry about it, but it's not something where, I think it's going to be, it was a weakness. I mean, it was a concern, in this game, but, next question, Neil Page says, following a very checkered season, I woke up New Year's to an Auburn loss and wins by Georgia and Alabama. Living in Atlanta amidst unbearable barking, I find myself compelled to utter the dark language of Mordor, Roll Tide. What is happening to me? Are we now the most tortured, pitied fan base in college football? How did it come to this? I just thought that was really funny.
I do not ask your pardon, Lord Auron. But if we do not stop the tide here, the dogs here, they will cover all the lands in a second darkness. I know. Yeah, that's. I wish I had that little clip from Lord of the Rings where he says the dark language of Mordor at the Council of Elrond. That's great. Oh, that's really good. I sympathize with his position, though. I mean, because that was the thing you and I talked about was, you know, yes. there was no good answer. There were only bad degrees of bad answers to that. So,
amen to that. If this is from Jared, he says, I heard that Mercedes-Benz Stadium was built on an aged tiger burial ground. What are your thoughts?
Yeah.
And we start next season in that stadium.
I'm horrified at the thought that we could be 0-3 in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yes.
I think that when we come back around next summer, this coming summer, and talk about the upcoming season in depth, we got to remember to, you know how sometimes we'll say that such and such a game is a must win. It's like you have to find a way to win that game. We said it about Georgia this past year. I really think that Washington game has become more important than it should be just in terms of us playing Washington. I think it's that game has become more important, not about beating Washington, but about us. That game is important for us about us, regardless of who we're playing. I mean, we could be playing a high school exhibition game in that stadium in August or September, and we need to win it. I don't care who we're playing, how good they are, whatever. We cannot go 0-3 in that stadium. It's not even that I don't want to be made fun of. It's the karma of it. It makes me sick at my stomach to think about. We've got to win that game.
Well, and today they Washington announced their running back is coming back next year, and their quarterback already said he's coming back. So they're gonna be tough.
Oh yay. Fabulous.
That's it for questions.
All right. Well, let's hit the pink button.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
What all is going on? We got some coaching changes a little bit. Not in Auburn, fortunately.
But some other schools.
Mm-hmm.
Our old friend is the offensive coordinator at LSU, Mr. Ensminger.
Oh, wow. Now, hold on. I'm glad you said that because I wanted to mention this. That is such an easy target that just screams at me surprise. In other words, that has Kevin Steele 2.0. Now, maybe not. Probably not. But remember when we hired Kevin Steele, everybody's like, oh, you idiots, what are y'all doing? What a disappointment. And that's really worked out very well, I would say. So is there any chance in your mind that Ensminger is Kevin Steele 2.0? You understand what I'm saying, right?
I thought the same thing a little bit when they announced it. I was like, well, he's got a lot of experience. I'll be surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, the guy they had as offensive coordinator had success at different places. And
what was up with that? He didn't like being bossed around by the crazy Cajun dude.
Well, and I think the crazy Cajun dude kind of kneecapped him in that one game.
Yeah.
And I think there was some personality conflict there too. He wasn't a good fit maybe, but at the same time, I mean, I think with the talent LSU has, if like Texas A&M hired the offensive coordinator away from Memphis, okay? If LSU had hired the offensive coordinator away from Memphis, I'd be much more worried about them. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. They're going with Ensminger. And because we have this history with him with 2003, I just can't – Auburn fans are going to be very – condescending about him being the offensive coordinator. That's the only way
natural,
to say it.
Right. It's just natural. Yeah. There's no way we can take that seriously. It's like a Clemson fan when we hired Kevin Steele. There's just no way they can take that seriously, but it worked out. Well, it's the same thing here. Ensminger may work out. Who knows? It's been 15 years. Maybe he learned a thing or two. But, there's
just
no
this
way that we can take that seriously.
No, but also I know this. If he comes out and they do a bunch of like I formation kind of stuff, those fans are going to hate him.
I mean, that's why they fired
Les Miles. That's it. So they can't go back there. He has to do some different stuff. So.
Oh my goodness.
So that was a big one. Bama's offensive coordinator Daboll left for the NFL. And so they are in search of an offensive coordinator. The rumor today is that former Ole Miss coach Hugh Freeze was on campus interviewing.
This is where disgraced coaches go to get rehabilitated.
Yes.
Bama is a rehab center for offensive coaches. It's amazing. It's what they do. You rise to the level of being a great offensive coach. You do some incredibly stupid thing and get your butt fired and shamed. And then you go and show off your brilliance under the stern tutelage and admonition of Nick Saban, so he purges you of all your sins. And then you can go get a head coaching job again. So, in other words, in 3 years, Hugh Freeze will be the head coach of Florida International.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, because they don't let him talk to the media and stuff, it was perfect for guys like Lane Kiffin. So, I don't know whether Freeze, I think he had a show cause for last year, or may have a show cause going forward for recruiting. So, that may be an issue. But maybe he doesn't. I have to go back and look. But that would be the only thing. But, I mean, he would be a dangerous offensive coordinator for them to hire.
Wow.
And there's a lot of turnover, you know, at that position. This would be like the fourth one they've had in a year or whatever. So,
you know, I've been head coach of Ole Miss here for several years, but I just feel like my career is not advancing as much as I like. I'm going to go do something incredibly stupid and get fired so I can move up and be at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
It's like failing up in a way.
It is.
That's amazing.
And then Texas A&M, you know, with Jimbo, they hired Damian Craig, and they hired the offensive coordinator from Memphis and the defensive coordinator from Notre Dame. So the big thing with Jimbo at Florida State was there was kind of some Les Miles feeling to him where he wanted to stay too pro style. And so he's really, you know, I think he's kind of proved all that false by going to hiring this guy away from Memphis. They do a bunch of good creative stuff on offense, so that'll be interesting to watch.
You reckon that Florida State defensive coordinator's wishing he'd taken the Auburn job when we were begging him a couple of years ago?
Kelly, yeah, probably. But I'm glad it worked out for us.
I think he's a parking lot attendant now.
I don't know where. He's not a Florida State, though, because they hired a guy away from Michigan State to be the defensive coordinator. So.
Oh, that seems tough. All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any last tidbits before we wrap up this show tonight, having come back from our break?
A lot of other SEC players went pro. I mean, yeah, Auburn was hit, but a lot of other schools were, too. I mean, Alabama lost a ton of talent, and Georgia lost, you know, Roquan Smith and Trenton Thompson. LSU lost Geis and Tauber and a couple of offensive linemen. So it's going to hurt them. I mean, Christian Kirk left LSU at A&M. Alabama lost Calvin Ridley, Bo Scarborough, Micah Fitzpatrick, and a couple of defensive linemen, I think. So.
I'm shedding tears. I don't know what they'll do. How will they get by? How will they get along with that loss of talent? I don't know.
I don't know either.
I just don't know. We should wear little ribbons to like thinking of the tide, yeah, in their time of need.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy! All right. Well, we got a cool week of Auburn basketball coming up. They're going to play at Tuscaloosa, I believe, on Wednesday, and then they play back at home against somebody, I think, on Saturday, which will be fun. I can't remember who off the top of my head. And I've really been enjoying this season so far. It helps when Georgetown is crap too. At least one of the teams is one of our teams is all right. Is Georgetown ever going to get their act together?
Eventually, but
is it just? I think it's just an institutional problem at this point. They can only win with John Thompson related coaches, and there's only so many.
Patrick Ewing is not the answer.
No, hoya paranoia, John. All right. Well, I think that'll do it for this week. We will be back either next week or the next, just depending on what our schedule. You and I have to email and chat and figure out what our schedule is going to be for the next couple of months, and we'll iron that out and share it with the folks out there. So I guess we will wrap it up. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com. and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/AUWishbone and follow the show on Twitter at AUWishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love? When they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.